course, for many years, he was in this business of ours, in the radio business, and certainly made quite a mark for himself as one of the great producers and creators for the radio industry many, many years ago. But since then, he has branched out and done so many other things. A lot of you probably know of him because of an incredible book that he wrote. For those of you who have wondered about or been involved in the out-of-body experience, called Journeys Out of Body. He also has done a great deal of work in this matter of the left brain and the right brain, and how to sleep and how to program sleep. And, well, we'll just talk about how to get you to sleep tonight, how to get you to use your brain, how to get you to become much more creative about everything, every aspect of your life. And certainly, we want to talk about the out-of-body experience, too. And on the line for that is Mr. Robert A. Monroe, the Monroe Institute. Bob, welcome to the Open Mind Show tonight.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be here. It's a little later where I am, of course, and it's Saturday night, and a lot of people are out and around, and some are going to bed, so here I am.
Well, it's Sunday morning where you are. You're talking to us from Virginia, I think.
That's true.
I appreciate you getting up on an early Sunday morning to join us out here in California on a late Saturday night. But we do have quite a group that are listening to you. We're very happy to notice in the latest ARB, and this is something you'll be interested in, Robert, is that this show has the highest single rating in its time period in the country.
Well, that's very remarkable.
And one of the reasons is certainly not me, but it is the subject matter that we get into and the guests that we have on board, and you're adding to that.
I think I listened to your introductory remarks, and one of the things that amused me a great deal, that back in 1955, I proposed a talk radio system that we called companionate radio.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it didn't sell among the network affiliates.
Well, now it's working very well.
It is indeed.
As you know, we originate the talk radio programming here at KABC in Los Angeles. That's heard now at about 60 stations around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's growing.
And very good.
We send it up on satellite, and they have a down leg at the stations, and so we're everywhere.
Very good.
Well, we've had so many questions about the out-of-body experience, Bob. Let's deal with that for a while before we get into the other things. I know that you have done a great deal of investigation into that. We have talked about it before here on these Saturday nights, and I've come to find out here in Los Angeles, Bob, that everybody in L.A. goes out of body but Bill Jenkins.
Well, now, I can rectify that very quickly. According to the latest studies that we have and others, you do go out of your body. The only thing is that you don't remember it.
Uh-huh.
And you achieve this little phenomenon when you go to sleep at night. And our premise is these days is that everyone does this. They simply don't remember it.
Well, I'm talking about those that take the wild and wonderful trips here, yon, and everywhere. You hear some incredible stories about people who move around with a great deal of freedom on the physical plane. Some of them that go even beyond the solar system.
Yes.
And then some that move into what may well be described as the other side, or another realm altogether that we're not totally familiar with.
We like to call those other energy systems.
All right.
Or other realities.
Have you ever gone out of body, Bob?
Have I?
Uh-huh.
Well, I stopped logging them officially at somewhere past the 2000 mark.
So you have gone.
Oh, gracious, yes. This has been... this started for me back, back in about 1958, and got me entangled in a whole area of which I was totally unfamiliar. And my first adventures in it were totally involuntary, and to me at the time, very, very frightening.
And, what is frightening about them?
Well,
is it the unknown?
Fundamentally, yes. I went through all the usual things at that time anyway, thinking that perhaps I had a brain tumor, that I was developing some type of psychosis. And after about various physiological runs with doctors and with psychiatrists and so on, the best that anybody could say was that I was totally sane, but I was simply performing what they called at that time conscious dreaming. And, of course, as I say, that was in 1958. And being unable and being unsatisfied with the answers that I obtained from, say, conventional scientific sources and various psychological friends, the best advice that I could get was that, oh, why don't you go to India and study under a guru for about 10 years, and then you'll understand the whole thing. But being much of a Western motif in my mental set, I also having a family and a mortgage on a house, I couldn't see how to do that. So I took an alternate route and began to use some R&D funds that we had in the company to form our own series of experimental research programs, and those gradually evolved until finally, as one does, it became a major part of my life.
Well, you've written a much touted book for those that are into this matter of the out-of-body travel, Journeys Out of Body. Who's your publisher on that?
That's published by Doubleday.
Doubleday?
Yep. It's been out for about 10 years, and I can say it was published about 1970, and then an updated edition came out in about, 78, I guess. And it's now, let me see, I think it sold more in 1982 than it did in 1970. It's published in about 5 or 6 languages.
Could it be that people are beginning to become aware of this new reality that is around us that we have so often put down or would not let our belief systems accept that this is going on, and they want to find out more about it?
Oh, I think that's one of the most remarkable things in this last 20-some years. From my own point of view, anyway, in, say, 1958 or 1960, and this was a very unacceptable subject in public matters, even on late radio. And as a result, I was somewhat of a closet explorer, as it were. I felt very sensitive that I'm head of a large corporation at that time, and quite concerned that the board of directors of that corporation might find out this secret thing that I was doing. And when I look at that today in 1983, it's amazing. If someone had told me in 1960, for example, that I would give a talk at the Smithsonian on out-of-body experience, I would laugh at them. I'd say the public would never accept it. But it's been massive changes in 20 years for us.
Well, as I mentioned to you before, everybody in L.A., I think, goes out-of-body, as you'll hear from the callers. I remember the first show I did on this, Bob, that I was amazed. I didn't know that such a thing happened, in fact. And so the show has always been a learning experience for me as much as it has been for the audience, I think. Or the audience teaches me a great deal. But not only do people go out of body, there were so many people were calling in and saying that they were meeting people out there that they knew.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day they would confirm their simultaneous experience, and that would prove to be so.
Well, statistics built up by various people in the last 8 or 9 years indicate that on a worldwide basis, somewhere between 25% and 30% of the world population consciously remember an out-of-body experience, at least one. And so the point of acceptability is, I say, it's a lot of people have come out of the closet.
Well, let me ask you something. If you have seen this definite separation of the physical and the etheric body, or the consciousness of the body from the physical body, what has that done to your own spirituality?
Well, first of all, if you say what has it done now or what did it do originally, I can give you 2 points of view.
Let's have them both.
The first early incidents of it made me feel that I was dying, and that I was in no mood to die at that particular moment, and desired to be nothing more than scramble back into my physical body. 20-plus years later, all I can say is that the out-of-body experience confirms and gets you past the belief system to a knowledge system that physical death is nothing more than a transition. It's a natural thing that you do survive physical death. And that survival has nothing to do with your religious beliefs or anything else. It's as natural as being born. And I think that's the most profound thing that would alter anyone's life, to get past the belief and hope stage, but know this. And I think that's how I feel. It's a piece of knowledge that one picks up along the way.
Can we talk in just a moment about some of the things that you experience when you go out of body and where the wanderings will take you?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
All right. You're spending a Saturday night with the Open Mind program. I'm Bill Jenkins, and my guest is Robert Monroe, who has served in a number of capacities as Vice President of Programs and Director of the Mutual Broadcasting System, Incorporated. He's now the head of the Monroe Foundation. He is an author of one of the finest books out on the out-of-body experience, Journeys Out of Body. I'm speaking to a heavyweight, and you'll have an opportunity to talk to Bob about the out-of-body experience. We have some other things to talk to him about, too, tonight. On KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. What experience, Bob, when you go out, and what can people look forward to whenever they get into that situation?
Well, it depends, again, I think, upon your own mental set, Bill. Most people, and I say most, who deliberately attempt such a state, find that they get into what we call a fear barrier. Some of the bravest characters that we have encountered in our laboratory work come in a very strong, macho point of view. But when it comes down to the actual fact of performing something, they begin to get this fear barrier. And it's a very simple thing. The fear barrier is the barrier that is the greatest obstacle in any attempt at achieving the out-of-body state. We have developed systems to get around it, but fundamentally, I think that's the biggest thing that people encounter is in their initial attempts at fear.
Well, I've had a different experience myself. I have tried to go. I've been taught a couple of techniques, and I get into an altered state of consciousness. I feel a rushing going on, and I get so excited that I wake up.
Well, that's another one, yes.
And then I get really, really angry about that because I wanted to try this out.
Yeah, excitement is one of the things that you get so excited. A lot of people that, I'm really doing this strange and wonderful thing. And they get so excited that it pulls them right back into the physical state.
So I've just given up on it. One of these days, it'll happen.
Well, talk to some of our people on the West Coast. Perhaps they can help you.
Paul and some of them are sitting here saying, oh, you shouldn't do that. I'm going to have to huddle with them after this is over, I suppose. What will you find out there?
What will I find?
What will most people, do they float around in their own environment, or do they go into other realms?
Well, the first thing that comes that is usually a great surprise to most people is that they don't find anything. They just find a big black nothingness. It's a dimensional blackness is the best way to put it. It's not a typical type of blackness. You have a sense that it has immense depth. And after that first one or two times like that in reaching this big black state, you either get bored with it or say, well, there's nothing to it. And then you begin to learn to perceive in this blackness, as it were. And some people do it very instantly, but others, I'm talking about in the systematic approach to it, they have to learn to begin to perceive in this other state. Once they do this and learn that they perceive with something other than eyes and ears and the normal sensory input, and then they begin to assemble their consciousness and their ability to perceive there, and from then they're on their way.
Where are some of the places?
Well,
I've heard some strange stories.
Well, it's as strange as you want it to be. As a matter of fact, you can be very prosaic and travel, let's say, from here in Virginia to the Los Angeles area, and home in on a direct spot, or more preferably a person. It's a lot easier to go to a person than it is a place.
Uh-huh.
And you can do this, but it's after about the 25th time or something, it gets rather boring. And this is one of our greatest problems in experimentation, because if you think you realize that you're moving through gray areas and rather dull places, and all of a sudden as you're traveling along up above somewhere, you see this beautiful bright light. You say, what's that? Well, once you go into that bright light area, it's the natural place. It's like coming out of clouds and into sunlight, as it were. And once you go visiting that other natural habitat of this, what we call the second body, you get into this second state where the second body's natural home happens to be, It's very hard to keep them down on the farm after they seem to leave. And to keep them in these very prosaic, systematic experiments is awfully hard because they're so attracted to this other area. And that other area is an entire vista of reality systems that are often very difficult to come back and translate in time, space, words, and phrases, or even pictures.
Do you find others up there?
Well, oh, yes. It depends on where you go and what you look for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an illustration that if you wish to visit someone who, let's say, a quote, dead father, that's possible, you may not particularly enjoy being there where your dead father is, and that doesn't mean he's gone to some wicked place. It means that his environment is there is not quite suitable for your particular energy system. You tend to be comfortable where you belong as against where, say, your father might belong. You can do this and do it on a temporary basis, but you don't feel comfortable staying there.
Are there any kind of rules and regulations that you seem to feel compelled to follow whenever you're in that place?
The best way I can say is that the rules and regulations have really no bearing on what we like to call the local traffic rules of here on Earth, as it were. The rules of behavior are vastly different and do not particularly follow the same pattern in a particular state. In other words, it says our rules of behavior are here on Earth are entirely different, say, even in Los Angeles, as they are different, say, in Maine. Or, to take an extreme, you go to the middle of China, where rules of behavior are entirely different in a remote hamlet than they are on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Can you leave the solar system?
Yes, we've done a lot of exploration like that, it becomes kind of amusing trying to find. We sketched out long and detailed vectors, as it were, beyond or after the initial solar system exploration, as it were. And we used to send teams of people out on these kinds of things. It got very exciting, except that we could not find any intelligent life. And we kept the eternal search for intelligent life. And when we did find it, we found that we had no means of communication, and that was one of the problems.
But you did find intelligent life.
Yes, we did a number of times, found that our problem was communication.
Have you checked the moon out real closely?
Yes, with reasonable certainty, yeah. What do you want to know about the moon?
Well, we hear all kinds of stories, Bob, about a lot of things going on up at the moon. What have you people found out?
Nothing. We haven't really gone over every inch of the moon because it's, again, kind of boring. You got to remember that it sounds rather crude or odd that it can be boring, but if you do this hour after hour and you see hour after hour of a series of craters, it's not very exciting.
Mm. It sounds to me like it would be extremely exciting.
It would be the first or the fifth or the tenth time, but after that, there's a lot more fun things to do.
Okay. Are you ready to tackle some of the callers? They're stacked up here about 45 deep, it looks like.
Oh, yes, certainly.
And we'll get to the callers in just a moment. You're on Open Mind tonight, and our guest is Robert A. Monroe. He's the head of the Monroe Institute. Open your mind.
Hi, Damien.
Yeah.
Mr. Monroe, I read your book, and as a child, I used to have spontaneous astral projections. I felt like when I was going to sleep at night, I would be like, say, 20 or 30 feet above my body, and it would only last like 10 or 15 seconds. But as like a teenager, I'm like 22 now, but like around the 17, 18, 19 area, whenever I'd have like emotional, you know, problems or something, you know, things wouldn't be going too good, I found that it was easier at those times to project out of my body. But a thing happened to me when I was 19 that has since, you know, made a block that I'm not able to project anymore. And it was that I was I never projected like more than like say 20 or 20 feet above my body, not going to the moon like you and stuff like that. But I one time I was felt like I was 20 or 30 feet, but then I was almost like going to be rapidly projected upwards, and I was so frightened that I came right back into my body. And since that time, I haven't been able to, in the slightest, project at all. And I was wondering, you know, what that could be from. Because I heard you mention this fear factor thing. I'm concerned. I'm afraid that sometimes, like, another spirit could enter my body, that could be part of it, or that I might not be able to find my way back. And I was wondering if you could shed any light on this.
Well, I, in terms of shedding light, this is, of course, a part of that fear barrier that I was indicating. It does take a great deal of courage, as it were, to when you feel you're going shooting upward, to simply let go and see what happens. We have, of course, a funny story in the trade, as it were, that nobody has died from being out of body. And, of course, they can say, well, nobody came back and reported it, but... but it is, that is the fear barrier that you're encountering. The next time that happens, if you just simply let go and let it happen with a calm knowledge that you'll get back. We have systems that help you do that and help you relieve yourself from that worry. One of them is we install in people, first of all, a panic button. It's our own jocular way of calling it, so that if you want to get back at any given time, you can push this mental panic button.
Right.
When you do this, you return to your physical very quickly and very automatically. The second thing is, of course, that, again, remember, we've been playing around with this in terms of developing methods for quite some time now. And the second one that you expressed concern about, and that is meeting antagonistic other beings, as it were, we've developed a few little systems to handle that, too. And I must say that in the last 2,000 plus, when I'm probably a year late in my quote, experiments with different people, I can't remember meeting any of them ever encountering any disagreeable person or disagreeable spirit or frightening spirit. So the system works pretty well.
Well, I've heard stories, Robert, that you have to be careful because while you're gone, someone might try to take over your body. Is there any? You found any evidence of that?
No, not in our work anyway. We've heard people express this fear, but once they understand the mechanics of it, the parameters that set up, then they realize that that's no problem. They can just, anybody attempting to do this, they simply pat them on top of the head and say, go play elsewhere. It's that simple.
Okay, David, does that help you?
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, thank you for your call. We have Ann on the line. Ann, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello. I've not had this experience.
You're in the club.
And I find it very intriguing. And I've written down a few questions. Essentially, I know people who have had this and who are highly reliable. And I want very much to believe that this is true because it's very exciting. At any rate, are there techniques? Is there an optimum personality that is more able to achieve this particular experience? Also, another question, do you feel specifically a different kind of peace as a result of knowing that you can do this? And when you go out on these trips for any length of, for these, to the moon and to wherever, do you age while you're out there in proportion to the time that you are, your body's happening here?
You want to go back and start with the first question?
Got a bunch of them there, Ann. We've got to take them on.
What was the first one again, Ann?
Is there an optimum personality that is more accessible for this?
We have a number of different types of profiles. There is not any such thing as an optimum personality that can perform this. Different results for different types of personalities. One of the things that we found is that people who have worked in different types of belief systems have to sometimes unload those belief systems a little bit before before they can get into these different states of consciousness, and that's the best way to define it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing truly as an optimum personality. There is a thing, however, that we do restrict people who have been very deeply into drugs. We do not work with them in our various experimental programs.
Oh.
The reason is that often the systems we employ will reintroduce various types of altered states created by drugs, and they're not conducive to the type of conscious control that we require.
Uh-huh.
What's the next one?
The next one is, do you feel, as a result of your experiences having happened involuntarily, and now through your research, have you discovered a new sense of peace?
Oh, very much. I think it's and peace is perhaps an understatement in the sense of what peace means. You have a great deal higher joy of living physically, strangely enough, because that ever shadow of death is not the same as it was before.
Okay.
You can live fully here, and that doesn't mean that you take unnecessary chances or anything like that, but you realize much more the purpose for living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a peace. That is a peace, and I think a joy is another word that better fits.
Okay, Gina?
Was there another?
I think it's Ann.
Yes, it is. The one more question is that when you go on these travels that are so far away, which would take us months and years and so on, do you age in your astral traveling to other planets and other galaxies in the way...
Do I age?
In other words, is it that you would be away for a few minutes, an hour, a year? For your body here on Earth.
Oh, your body does not age, or it does no more than it would in the normal real-time sense. Let's say if you were out of your body 5 minutes, for example, your physical body would age 5 minutes.
So it takes 5 minutes to go to the moon and back?
Well, no, it takes maybe 5 seconds. in that same 5 minutes, you got to remember that you're existing then in this other state, in this other state of consciousness. You're dealing with a state where time does not exist for you. So in that 5 minutes, you can have 50, the equivalent of 50 years of experience in sexual health.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ann, thank you for those questions. You're spending Saturday night on Open Mind tonight on KABC. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute. We're talking about the out of body experience, and Robert and his group have done a great deal of research into it, and we'll find out more about that. Get back to your calls in the book some time ago, but it's an excellent one on the subject called Journeys Out of Body. He's the head of the Monroe Institute, and they're doing a great deal of study and concerted research in this particular area, this phenomenon, this part of the reality of this world that we live in that so many of us are not used to, or maybe have a little bit of trouble getting it past our belief systems. Bob, you know, we quite often talk about on this show this little reality box that we all have that is pretty well shaped by our religions and what we have taught and what we've experienced in life, and that forms a window through which we view reality, this reality box. And quite often it's not a window at all, it's a little peephole. And we're trying to stretch your reality box tonight to let you know that there is such a thing as the out-of-body experience that goes on. Let's talk to Gina and see what's on her mind. Gina, welcome to Open Mind.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Bill.
Huh?
And hello, Mr. Monroe.
Hello there.
Now, I had an experience when I was approximately, I would say 4. I could project myself. Now, I know that this sounds really crazy, but it sticks in my mind just as if it was last week.
Go ahead and spit it out for
us. Okay. I could project myself into my mother's head and see her looking at me and speaking to me. Sometimes when she would be saying something I didn't particularly like, or if she was telling me something that I had to do, or, something that was very important, and when she was looking right at me, I could go from my head, my brain, right into her her head, brain, mind, and see myself. You know, she was much taller than I, and I could see her looking down upon me. And no longer was I in my own body, but I was in hers. And I could, no longer was I myself, but I was her talking to me. Now, one time I told her about this, and I was really, chewed out. And my mom said, that's absolutely impossible, that cannot be. And from then on, I could no longer do it. And
you had her program you, didn't you?
Yes, I really did. And what I would like to do is know how I could do this again, because I know I was not schizophrenic or crazy. I was a very happy, little kid. And I would like to know, first of all, what is this? And second of all, how could I do it again?
Well, I've had the feeling my wife has done that to me for about 25 years. But let's see what Bob has to say about that.
Okay.
All I can say is that you must have been a beautiful baby, but also a very strenuous one for your mother. What would a poor mother do when a child reported that? She did what she could only advise, and that is worry about what is happening to her little 4 or 5 year old daughter.
They kind of laughed, and they didn't think I was schizoid or crazy or anything like that. But I think this I was born in 1949, and I think at that time things were not as advanced as they are today as far as parapsychology and things of that sort.
Not as aware.
Right.
Bob, do you have any...
I don't have any particular advice for you. You can, there are ways that you can reopen that if you so desire. And I think the important thing is that for you to think about if you were able to do this and do it at a very conscious, willful way, what would you do then? I think this is a philosophic question that comes up so often. A parallel to that on a different approach, one of the physicists who had been doing research with us for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
and this is about 6 or 7 years ago, his little 4-year-old boy came in who was quite precocious, incidentally, and he was waiting for his father to come out of a given research thing, and I was sitting there, and he very shyly looked at me, and he said, "I do what you and Daddy do." I said, "What's that?" He says, "I float." How do you do that? And he says, "Well, I'm in my bed in my room and I float." And I says, "Well, what do you do when you float?" He says, "Oh, I float out of the room and down the hall and out the front door and to see what's going on outside." And he went to describe what he that type of thing, but he used it in a very practical way. He would vote to see if his sister's in the bathroom, so if he had to go, he could get in. It was very interesting.
Do you have any experiences or research where people have projected themselves inside the body of another person, as you was telling us about?
Yes, particularly into other reality systems. We have not done much in this particular time, space continuum, in terms of getting into other people. I don't know why we haven't, except that it didn't seem particularly appealing to us.
But, what I always wonder about, if Owen and Mother had not told me that that was impossible, I just, if I had someone that had more knowledge about these types of things, I just wonder what I could have gone on to do.
Well, that's speculation at this point in time.
Yeah.
But you can do it.
You can still do it.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to start to try, because sometimes I have flashes of, very strange things where I know something is going to happen, and I have a feeling that I do have a sense about about things that may happen in the future, and I have a feeling about things that...
Well, you know, there are a number of books on that, Gina, that you can get into. You can get Bob's book. It's available around.
Oh, great.
And open up those doors and see what you can do.
Wonderful.
I would suggest that you write us and tell us about yourself, and there may be some way that we can... do something of interest for you or with you, and that's the best way.
What is your address, Bob, in case anybody wants to contact you?
Yeah. Look, I have a pen and pencil here.
Okay. All right.
It's very simply Monroe Institute.
Monroe?
Yes.
Hey, Gina, don't repeat it. Just listen.
Okay.
Faber, Virginia, and that's F as in Frank. A, B as in boy, E-R, Virginia, 22938.
Okay, Monroe Institute, Faber, Virginia, 22938. Now, if you missed that, Lita will have that for you on Monday morning. Gina, thank you very much for your call. We're going to let you go and get on to somebody.
Thank you so much, dear.
Okay, thank you. You're with Bill Jenkins on Open Mind tonight. Robert A. Monroe is our guest. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and I believe we have Barbara on the line. Barb?
Hi.
Yeah, what's your problem?
Mr. Monroe, what a pleasure to talk to you, to listen to you. You are such a thoroughly respectable person, and in this business, that's such a joy to hear. I have a couple of questions for you, sir. The first being, with a great deal of meditation work, which I have done, would I be safe in attempting this sort of thing myself? I should say by myself.
Oh, yes. If you've have done a great deal of meditation, it's a very simple step from a deeply meditative state to these other states of consciousness. It is neither difficult nor dangerous to perform by yourself. I think once you set certain, I don't say rules, but certain procedures is the best way. Nothing dangerous.
Is it kind of a natural thing? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, it is. It's, as I stated somewhere back in the beginning, that the out-of-body state in and of itself is a natural phenomenon. It is a thing that takes place, and we're very dogmatic about it now, that when you go to sleep, at a certain stage of sleep, you move out of your body.
Uh-huh.
And when we perform this in slow motion, as it were, as a falling asleep process, you, quote, fall out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, part of it is simply remembering. And once you recognize it to be a natural technique, a natural condition.
Mm-hmm. And the transition from meditation into it and through the various steps of it would be natural transition?
But indeed.
I see. Okay.
All right, Barb.
I have just a little bit more.
Well, make it quick because there's so many that want to be talked about.
Regarding the business about possession, about bodies, entities moving into the body when one is out of the body.
Yes.
I believe very much that throwing light on anything would help dispel fear so much. And I have talked to so many people, myself included, that have been very fearful for that reason. There is no fear, as far as you're concerned, with any entity that might be kind of in the vicinity of your body, coming into your body while you're out of it?
Obviously, in the very early stages, and we're talking some 20 years ago, I encountered such types of events. And I had obviously such kinds of fears. In these interim 20 years, all I can tell you is that in a simple cause and effect type of exercise, research, there are systems that will let this drop away completely from any theory or any possibility. And a lot of people feel that, this is a dangerous thing that might happen. It cannot happen if you take certain, and I don't use the word precaution. It's not that at all. It's just a state, a mental state that you get into that you know, and then you have no problem.
You're wonderful. Thank you.
Mm.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Barbara.
Goodbye.
You're on Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins with Robert Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body experience. Don?
Yes.
All right, you're on.
Good evening. I should tell you, Bill, that I have never had an experience either, and I've been trying to have an experience for about 2 years now.
Well, maybe we'll find out a way tonight that we can do that.
I hope so. The big thing that I wanted to ask Mr. Monroe is there some steps that you can take to get started on your own, and is it safe to be on your own to start out doing something like this?
The best answer I can give you is some stuff you can take. If you talk about chemicals or drugs, no. There is nothing that...
No, I mean something in the way of meditation, which I've tried.
There are states or things that you can do, and meditation is one of them. There are other types of... One of the best ways that you can do it is get as completely isolated as you can. In other words, I have to get into this description of processes that we use in order to help you a little bit. Whenever Bill feels that's the time to do it, I will.
Okay, we'll try to get into that during the next hour. We're about to wrap this hour up, Don.
Okay.
However, I just found out that there will be some workshops in the Monroe Institute available March and April here, and we'll try to keep you posted on those things. And if we can get some firm dates for you, we certainly will.
Okay.
Appreciate your call, Don.
Thank you very much.
And this first hour has flown by. Are you still awake and with us out there in Virginia, Bob?
More or less.
We're going to take a break for ABC News. So they'll give you 5 minutes.
Bill?
All right, we've got somebody on the line. I believe that's...
Bill?
Yes.
It's Helen.
Hello, Helen. Helen, I want you to sit still there. I got to go find Bob.
Now, do you hear me now?
There we are.
Oh, you had a big fat dial tone going in there.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Here, we've got the most sophisticated phone system in the communications industry at work for us, Bob, but what we have are the most unsophisticated fingers of Bill Jenkins that ever happened at a radio station.
Sounds very familiar.
I have a quick question before we get to Helen's here. Is there any kind of scientific data or proof that all of this is actually happening with you and those people in the Institute and the researchers that you have gone along with?
One of the biggest problems is that you cannot measure the fire. You can only measure the smoke, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that biomonitoring as such is the only tool of measurement that one can really use. There have been a number of different types of... field effect analyzers and things like that, and they still don't give science the proof that it demands that this truly exists. We can show changes in EEG patterns in the brain. We can show difference in all types of physiological responses, but they don't actually define, other than in a repeatable form, these same physiological states, but they don't say, oh, this is the out-of-body state.
Well, what about some information retrieval evidence?
You can do this, and it varies. There are varying degrees of success in it, but that again, could be a thing almost labeled a remote viewing, as it were,
mm-hmm.
Which is something as we perceive it different than the out-of-body state.
Remote viewing is quite different. Professor Johns and his group at Princeton University are doing a lot of work in that.
The difference being, for example, and we use our classic form, if you can affect the environment in which you visit, somehow, this then, in and of itself, it does indicate something other than remote viewing. The illustration of which is, again, has been done, is to get in and affect electronic circuitry. That has been done in the out-of-body state. The most classic one that we use is to affect a human being, as you can affect animals, but... A human being can respond much more specifically. And one of our fondest techniques is to give somebody a pinch, as it were, and do not indicate where you're going to pinch them, and then verify. It's very, very effective.
Hmm. All right. The scientists, of course, are going to have to deal more and more with this.
Yes, so the problem, you see, is to... A system of measurement. You're trying to measure another energy state, another form of energy that is not measurable by the means, either mechanical or electromechanical means, that are the basis of most of our measurement systems, or electromagnetic or hard radiation. It's a different type of energy being used. The problem is that we do not have instrumentation that will systematically do this kind of measurement.
Well, those in your group that you're working with, have you ever found a use for this human phenomena or this natural state of the human that we're just now finding out that, for instance, law enforcement could use, perhaps?
Yes. We get into applications, as it were, but we're not We're not into that application. And I don't have any real answer why we have not. It's simply that it hasn't fallen our way. We've gotten so much involved in the semantic process and its applications that because it is working with consciousness, and this is where we are, is working with consciousness and changes within that consciousness. And this is why I guess we've gotten somewhat diverted into that instead of using the out-of-body state, say, for law enforcement.
I think that there are groups that are involved in this that are actively using it in law enforcement, and there are law enforcement organizations, not both on the federal, state, and local levels, that have no qualms about going to the out-of-body travelers.
Yes, I'm quite sure. We just haven't done it. We've become so involved and being used with our hemispheric synchronization process that, and its application, and I sound like I'm repeating, which I probably am, but I'm sure that your audience knows all about right and left brain, and
They've been with me for a while. They've learned about it.
The difference is here that we use a series of audio or sound pulses to create a coherent brain activity. And coherent means that it is a simultaneous action of both hemispheres. Ordinarily, one in mentation in daily life, they use an either-or process. It's either a left brain or a right brain function, and it can flicker back and forth.